This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A report in the New York Times reveals that government and businesses are making more and more use of a tool called the Video News Release. Short, local TV-style news reports, or supposedly news reports, which extol the virtues of various programs and products. TV stations across the country weave them into their regular newscasts without identification. Viewers have no way to know that they're watching public relations, not journalism. Those who produce VNR say the material is informational, and when it comes to government agencies, nonpartisan. They also say VNRs are clearly labeled, and if TV stations neglect to identify the source, that's their problem. In newsrooms, the practice brings up serious ethical questions. In Congress, Democrats have raised questions of their own about whether this practice is propaganda and whether it's legal. Later on in the program, a popular edition of the Bible gets a rewrite. Clarity and vernacular are in. Saints and aliens are out. But first, the controversy over video news releases. If you work in public relations or in a TV newsroom, we'd especially like to hear your thoughts on VNRs this hour. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Emailed address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Larry Moskowitz, president and CEO of MediaLink, one of the country's biggest VNR production houses, and he joins us from our bureau in New York. Nice of you to come in and talk with us today.
And thanks for having me.
What does a VNR look like?
Well, I think the terminology is pretty important here. Typically, we use the reference of video or broadcast public relations because if it's the introduction of a new product, a new car, it may not need a narration or a package. So there's very little controversy. Here are pictures of the new car.
What newsrooms would call B-roll.
Which they'd call B-roll, or some would refer to as a video news release.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the terminology is not used with precision. In some stories, when they're more complex, it is advisable and common where a story that would be fashioned in a news style would then be constructed. I'd like to make a couple points here. The audio, which would be narrated, there'd be some kind of a suggested script, would have to be on two tracks. One, along with the natural sounds of, let's say, that it's the car race or it's the operating room,
mm-hmm.
and the other with a narrator. And it's done precisely that way so it can be easily edited at the station level.
So they can take it apart if they want to and use these clips however they choose to, or they could run it as a package.
They're built to be stripped. They're built to be edited. But on the other hand, they can stand alone. And one of the reasons for that is the Internet. Many companies and organizations post these on their own websites for informational purposes or use them internally. And so those pictures need to be stitched together in some kind of a narration in order for them to be used that way.
Who comes to you to produce these VNRs? Companies? Government?
Yeah, we have about 3,000 clients all around the world, where everybody from the European Space Agency, where we do VNRs of space launches to satellite construction. We do work for the British Department of Transport, advising citizens of unsafe habits in terms of crossing streets. The Consumer Product Safety Commission comes to us because they've got B-roll or actually a whole VNR of how a baby carriage might be dangerous and why it's being recalled.
Mm-hmm. Now, we see, for example, I think every clip we've seen of Martha Stewart after her release from prison says up in the corner, Martha Stewart Omnimedia Productions. That's a VNR, in a way. That's provided by Martha Stewart's company to television stations that want to run it.
That's right, Neil.
And we've also seen when Steve Fossett landed after his record-breaking round-the-world flight, it said Atlantic Virgin up in the corner. That was a VNR.
Well, my favorite was the moon landing, because that was a VNR. Didn't necessarily say NASA, but I don't think ABC or NBC or CNN cameras were on the moon.
Indeed. But I think we also did see, well, strangely enough, pictures of the astronauts setting up. We knew where that picture was coming from. Is it a problem when TV stations do not identify the source of this material?
Well, we issued standards back in 1989. One word about MediaLink, we've been around since 86, and our ranks are filled with former network producers, anchors, reporters, both here and at the BBC, TF1 in France. And we, as we organized the company, we recognized there were not clear standards. And so we established very, very strict guidelines on full disclosure. So just as a written press release which the New York Times failed to point out, this is really the television equivalent, and there's very little difference between it. They are clearly labeled video news release produced for. We will not distribute anything, and most of the industry won't, that does not have those two things in two different ways, belts and suspenders. One is the textual advisory so that the broadcaster knows that video is available. Mm-hmm. And secondly, on the slate or the video that would go in front of the actual story, that would also state that this is a video news release for free and unrestricted use, and then include for whom it was produced, the ultimate entity, whether that be a government agency or a corporation.
So the television station should be under, no illusions about the source of this material, yet they could play this packaged material, and it often, some of these end with somebody saying, and I'm Joe Smith in Washington or wherever, and it would look just like a local TV news piece.
Yeah, and some of them, I'd say the vast, vast majority are so non-controversial that it wouldn't necessarily, there isn't necessarily an opposite side. I think the introduction of the purple M&M, which is a story that we handled a couple of years ago, was pretty non-controversial. Usually, our experience is 90% of the time the script is rewritten and they don't use that narration. It's pretty rare.
They're rewritten in the newsroom, the TV newsroom.
Absolutely, yeah.
And they, for the most part, they do not use these packaged pieces, you're saying?
For the most part, no. We see, I'd say it's probably 15% or less that they're used intact. They're generally edited and almost invariably rewritten.
Yet if the purpose is, as you say, for them to be taken apart and used by the newsroom in their normal news gathering process, why isn't it disingenuous to send out a package that could play and look just like local news?
I don't think so, for a host of reasons. Number one, TV people think in TV. And so often complex stories, when we've done big medical breakthroughs or surgical devices, which are pretty complex, or even automobile technology, a lot of these need to be put to the producer in such a way as here's the story so they get the aha.
Mm-hmm.
And often the voiceovers are not network quality talent. It's former reporters and producers, many of whom were never on the other side of the camera, mm-hmm. that are there as a guide. The stations that tend to use them in full, we find that, as I say, rare. On the other hand, I can point out on any given day in the Wall Street Journal and, yay, even the New York Times, certainly the Washington Post, and definitely smaller newspapers, where press releases, certainly earnings releases, merger announcements, dividend declarations, a lot of business stories wind up being very, very scantily edited, if at all.
And it also should be pointed out in terms of government terms. People say, look, this is nothing new. It was done in the Clinton administration. I remember audio versions of these done in the Reagan administration.
Well, in fact, one of my friend's father was a guy named John C. Long. And he was a celebrated columnist for the New York Herald Tribune, and then took a job as the first PR guy at the old Bethlehem Steel. In 1924, he wrote a book called Public Relations. 1924, commercial television had only existed for 2 or 3 years, and he was already talking about the common practice of audio news releases. So the video news release we've traced back easily to the Eisenhower administration. The Kennedy campaign relied on them. They had a team of about 6 or 7, I think Frank Mankiewicz, was one of the senior producers for the Kennedy work. Nelson Rockefeller used video news releases to get into government, and they used them extensively during their administration. So to say it's a creation of the Clinton administration is wrong. It predates all that. It probably goes back to movie-tone news in the 20s and 30s.
Let's get some callers involved in the conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255. Email is totn@npr.org. We're speaking with Larry Moskowitz, chairman and president of Media Link, which is a VNR production company. And Mark is with us on the line from Oakland, California.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Two quick comments. First of all, I mean, the New York Times and other media have reported that these VNRs are being shown on local news stations and in some major markets, in fact, without attribution. Two observations about that. Isn't it the responsibility of a local news director to identify the source of that material if it takes a viewpoint? And number two, why aren't those news directors being fined by the FCC, and why is the FCC wasting its time issuing fines for four-letter words?
Well, Mark, thank you for those questions. They're questions, though, not so much for Larry Moskowitz, but for our next guest. Larry Moskowitz, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Larry Moskowitz, president and CEO of Media Link, with us from our bureau in New York. And our next guest is Tom Rosensteel, director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. We reached him at home in Chevy Chase, Maryland. And as always, Tom, nice to have you on the program.
Thanks, Neil.
So if these are being used without attribution, as Mark just asked, isn't that a problem for news directors?
Yes. I mean, I think that it's not really for journalists to say whether this violates federal statute or not, or whether it's proper for the government to do that. Our job as journalists is to play that gatekeeper role over what we put on the air or in our newspapers. And, I mean, I think there's clearly fault here if news directors are taking government handout, whether it's video or print or anything else.
Or corporate handout, for that matter.
And slapping it on the, you know, and slapping on the air and not identifying it. You know, two of the most basic tenets of journalism, and not even at a high level, are that you don't become an arm of the government, and that you, you know, you don't just put press releases in the newspaper. Before you even get to the issue of does it violate some special canon if it's taxpayer money, and all the other questions that are associated in this case.
Mm-hmm. Mark, by the way, thank you very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Nick.
And Tom Rosensteel, as we continue to explore this this phenomenon, you know, Larry Moskowitz pointed out a lot of places used a B-roll of the blue M&M. When it's non-controversial, I mean, there's an awful lot of examples when it's not.
Yeah, and I believe, Neil, that it's fully appropriate for the government to produce material for journalists. I mean, it's not. There's nothing wrong with the government producing press releases that are going to be assumed to be material that will be incorporated into stories. It's also appropriate for the government to do public service announcements and explain how you can get, you know, how to submit your Social Security, you know, forms, or all of those things that a government might need to do to communicate to citizens. In information that's in the public interest. What we're talking about here is a zone that is where they are promoting policies and where there's clearly a you know, another side to it. And I don't, you know, I wouldn't sort of joust with Moskowitz about what the percentages are between non-controversial material and controversial.
We'll be back with more on this after a short break. We're talking about video news releases, and we'd like to hear from you, especially if you work in the public relations or the television news business. 800-989-8255. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the increasing use of video news releases, fully produced segments that extol government programs and commercial products, which find their way onto local television newscasts, often without attribution. Our guest is Tom Rosensteel, director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. You're invited to join us at 800-989-8255 or email us, TOTN@npr.org. And Tom, before we go to the phones, is there something that has changed that would make the use, to increase the use of these materials?
Yeah, and this is a very important point, Neil. First of all, the technology has made it easier and easier for government, for corporations, for any interest group that wants to manipulate public opinion. But the situation in local television has changed, too. In the content analysis that we've done over the years of local TV, we've seen a dramatic rise in the use of secondhand material, of feed material, and a commensurate decline in the number of stories that include a local reporter, a staff reporter. Why is this happening? Well, local TV news, like network, is losing audience. And what stations have done to grow their finances is add more programming to the day so that there's 5 o'clock a.m. news and 5:36, 6:30. There's news often now starts at 3 o'clock. It's not unusual for stations to produce 5, 6, 7 hours of news a day with the same size newsroom that they used to produce 3 or 4 hours of news a day. And that has stretched everybody thin and has led to, frankly, more use of this material from second sources.
So the news hole, as we call it, news hole has gotten a lot bigger.
News hole has gotten bigger, and the number of people shoveling into it in the newsroom has not gotten any bigger.
At the same time, the distribution of these materials has also changed. It used to be they arrived in the mail. Now they come over the same satellite that real news comes over.
And from the same source, in the sense that they're distributed by CNN Newsfeed and other other places that are also distributing material, you know, from CNN.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get some listeners involved. Carol joins us from San Francisco. Carol, you're on the air.
Hi, Neil. It's good to hear your show. I used to work in public relations and more recently for a magazine as an assistant editor. And I would say at least half of our stories were basically rewritten press releases. And I don't think people realize how often that occurs, that so little investigative journalism goes into it, especially when it comes to magazine writing.
When you switched sides and went back to the magazine side, were you surprised by how much material of the companies you used to work for wound up in your magazine?
Yeah, I was pretty shocked. I mean, I always knew it was kind of a very tight relationship, but literally just a few words were paraphrased, and that was put down as the story and a byline, and the pictures are provided. Everything's provided.
Hmm.
So a lot of that goes on. It would be plagiarism if it wasn't condoned, I guess.
If they didn't want you to plagiarize.
Exactly. Exactly. But thank you. This is a great show.
Thank you very much for the call, bye-bye. Carol. And, we should point out, Tom Rosensteel, this happens in audio. It happens in print as well.
Right. And, I'm sorry to hear her experience. In the newspapers I worked on, it was pretty. It was considered verboten to slap press releases in the paper, and
press release journalism was an insult.
Yeah, right. I mean, and your brethren, your peers would know because they get the same press release over at the rival newspaper.
Let's talk now with Calvin. Calvin's in Spokane, Washington.
Good afternoon. I would like to follow on Carol's comments. I worked in advertising quite a few years ago, and at that time there was a popular book in the bookstores titled The Hidden Persuaders. The cover art featured an apple on a fish hook.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite a provocative cover, and this story reminds me of that. It may be appearing in a different form today and maybe on a bigger scale. I can tell you that if you are an advertiser wanting to sell a product or promote your business, it's awfully nice to have the local newspaper do a story about you, which has the kind of comments and contents that Carol was talking about. But there is a very fine line, and it's kind of a blurred line, and it's easy to cross that. And the only thing that saves the reader is that the reader, when he's reading an article in the business section, for example, or in a financial newspaper, knows beforehand that he has to discern these things.
Mm-hmm.
And if he has a little bit of time to actually read and think about what he's reading, then he can do that, he or she can. When it's broadcast, everything happens at such a rapid pace that it's awfully hard. And you have to watch the graphics in the corner, as you mentioned earlier, and watch everything else and listen to everything else and how it's done, the style and the manner in which it's done.
Yet Tom Rosensteel, the producers of these VNRs seem to go out of their way to make the audio quality, the video quality, right up to local TV news standards so that it will look exactly like local TV news.
Right. I mean, the big score is if they use the whole thing, you know, without a change. And that's certainly something that they imagine will happen, which is why they package these things as complete stories. We're in an environment now where traditional journalism is only one means of communication. Journalism exists as a subset of this wider world of media, and part of that media world now includes direct communication from government and corporations to consumers. I've read essays in public relations magazines about the evolution from viewing the press as a constituency that you tried to persuade to a conduit that you employed. And there was no more whining and dining. You were doing it on another level, and you no longer tried to, in effect, change the mind of the reporter. You didn't need to.
You could just buy them.
You could buy them. You could get material in. You could stage pseudo-news events. There were more sophisticated ways than, you know, taking somebody to lunch.
And is there a distinction in your mind between a corporate video news release that extols the blue M&M, just to pick an example, and something from the State Department which extols government policy in Afghanistan?
Well, one obvious difference is that the taxpayers are paying for whatever the government is producing, and our government is set up in a two-party system that's adversarial, there are a whole lot of taxpayers who may disagree with the policies of the government, and they are, in effect, paying for that material. That's one difference. But for the journalist, I think the answer is probably not. Our job, presumably, remains to speak truth to power, to verify information, to present multiple sides to stories, to, you know, try and live up to the goals of fairness and independence. And you don't, you're not doing that if you're taking a, a government package and putting it on the air just because it's easier.
Tom Rosensteel, that cough is evidence of a cold, maybe the flu. We're fortunate that you decided to fight through it to speak with us today. We're going to let you go.
Okay,
get some chicken soup, Tom. Tom Rosensteel is director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism, and he joined us by phone from his sickbed in Chevy Chase in Maryland. Joining us now is Chris Lee, news director for KRON-TV in San Francisco. Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Neil.
I wonder, does your station use VNRs?
We try very hard not to. I should say we try very hard to never use them in their entirety, because really we look at this much like a written press release that comes in via fax or an email. There may be elements in there that are newsworthy, but you really need to pull out that element. You need to identify where it's from, and certainly you don't want to take the thing verbatim and put it on the air.
Mm-hmm. So, again, using the example of the blue M&M and why we're giving them this much publicity, I don't know. But if you were doing a story, you might use the B-roll from that piece. You might use the comment of the president of the candy company, but you would add other things.
Right. And sticking with that example, I'm kind of hopeful we wouldn't have done that story at all. But if we had, at minimum, you know, the little writing at the bottom of the screen should have said, you know, clip courtesy of M&M Mars.
Mm-hmm. So this should always be identified.
It should. But the difficulty is in particularly, I mean, as Tom Rosensteel spoke, we're one of those shops that we do 9 hours of local news a day. We do 9 hours of news broadcasts a day. So we have all that economic pressure that he talks about to do more with less. But by the same token, people who've gotten to San Francisco are pretty good at what they do. My worry is in the medium and small markets where, you know, the other, these things essentially come into our inbox like spam in your email. If you're not careful, if you don't have some skill, you may not really stop to realize that this particular package that came via CNN is not a CNN package. It's something from some advertiser who wanted a piece of publicity.
Mm-hmm. So you can't say with certainty that you've never used these.
I know we've used pieces of them, and here's how how television news operations will typically use a piece. For example, somebody will make a new, let's call it a silicon chip fabrication plant, and these are clean rooms and you never get in there, or pictures of dollar bills rolling off the presses. These are pieces of video that get saved and one day get used in some generic situation. You're talking about the economy and you run pictures of money coming off the press because you haven't got a better idea. That's the classic way these things get on the air, and frankly, I'm not as concerned about that because truly we have not told the story the advertiser wanted us to tell. We've simply borrowed some wallpaper.
This is, again, the terminology in television is B-roll.
Right.
Let's get some callers on. Paul joins us from St. Louis.
Hey, guys. I was a television news producer and assignment editor starting in Mobile, Alabama, then St. Louis, Missouri, and then Kansas City through the 90s. And I see no real difference between VNR and a regular press release. It's what you do with it mm-hmm. that defines the credibility of your journalism. I think the real problem is that there's more news out there, fewer people doing it, and they're getting younger in the small and medium-sized markets.
Did you use VNRs, the whole package I'm talking about, when you worked in those markets, Paul?
You know, I can't recall ever just grabbing one and throwing it on there, but doing morning news, if you're coming up with an hour of content and you're 24 and that clock is ticking, I can see the urge to do it, but I really don't think I did. I don't know.
As you watch others now doing what you used to do, do you ever notice that, well, you look at that and say, you just used a VNR?
I don't watch television news anymore at all.
Okay. Well, Paul, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate your decision to devote yourself to radio.
Thanks.
Okay. Chris Lee, is that the distinction that you were talking about there between big markets and small markets?
It is, definitely. And I think you find that people You know, this is one of those when I was a lad stories. But I think younger people tend to move up a lot faster these days when they did in, than they did in the post-Woodward and Bernstein era when a lot of bright people wanted to be in this business. And I know there, I'm sure there are occasions in medium and small markets where somebody's faced with a two-hour news block, and this thing looks like a different. You got to remember, some of these stories are actually interesting. But, you know, you owe it to your viewers to take it apart and understand where it's from and identify what needs to be identified.
We're talking with Chris Lee, news director for KRON-TV in San Francisco, about video news releases. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's talk now with Ian. Ian's with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I'd like to add to what Chris was saying. I actually really, he kind of hit the nail on the head there with number one, inexperience in the newsroom, and two, with the type of information that's ending up on larger news source feeds. When this stuff comes into the newsroom that I work at, a lot of the times it looks just like a news story, but if you start to read along with it or identify certain parts of it, all of a sudden, say you want a fluffy dog story at the end of a news block, and you see something on the feed that's a dog competition. And all of a sudden you start running the dog competition story, but then you realize that it's got somebody's corporate name smeared all over it.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you have a lot of the younger producers who choose or select these types of stories, and then they suddenly find themselves, you know, looking to fill that time in the news block. And you end up with a lot of what's basically advertising coming through your news product.
Okay, Ian, thanks very much.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck. Chris Lee, other than internal measures, I mean, if somebody got caught doing this, certainly on any regular basis, at your station, would you say it's time to look for work somewhere else?
Oh, absolutely. We, you know, viewers' trust is the most important thing we have, and, you start badging advertisements as news, and you're playing with that. So we would take that very seriously.
Let's talk with Sally. Sally's in San Jose, California.
Hi, Neil. My absolute pet peeve in local news is the live shot in front of the empty building where nothing has happened for 12 hours.
But that's not a video news release necessarily, Sally.
No, not at all. But it seems to me there's an incredible pressure to give this representation of being live, being on the cutting edge, being there, and that those resources being used for those kinds of stories are preventing the resources from being used on the more substantive stories that don't involve the live shot. And that may be where the pressure is for the VNRs to be used.
Okay, Sally. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And let's see if we can get one more caller in. Tim. Tim's calling from Salem, Oregon.
Hello, Neil.
Hi.
Hey, I've got a question for the guests on there. I'm a senior editor for a website called PocketNow.com, and we do a lot of news stories. I do get a lot of press releases coming in all the time. But with the current technology moving the way it is, with PDAs and smartphones and the like, we're going to see a lot more of this sort of content being pushed out to smaller and smaller devices. Now, while that's not necessarily a bad thing, we will start seeing smaller and smaller text print to kind of offset to tell people, you know, where this content is coming from, and I'd like to hear their comments on what they think is possibly the best plan to keep that sort of content to let people know where it's really coming from and how it's really going to pan out.
Yeah, Chris Lee, are you going to start getting this stuff on your watch?
I hope not. Well, you know, it's the same old journalist role that's very important. Journalist is filter. You really, as the viewing public, as the wristwatch reading public, we don't really want everyone who wants to tell us a message to waste our time with it. And that's why the whole infomercial, or I should say, well, it really is an infomercial, these VNRs. That's why this is so vital, because if we start wasting viewers' time because we're passing on advertisements, they're going to go somewhere else.
Yes, I could see that happening, but with the smartphones, even just my phone I'm calling on right now, I can get video content on it through Verizon right now. And regardless of the novelty of it, sooner or later, the bandwidth is going to be enough that it will be less of a major media that's producing this sort of content, and a lot of little smaller pieces that's going to be pushed to people all the time. I mean, it's going to be spam everywhere.
Yeah, and I think what it means is there may be a new breed of journalist where they're filtering content from multiple sources for the service you subscribe to. I mean, as an example, you could say, I want the news picked by Peter Jennings, and somebody at ABC News could filter the things that are interesting based on what Peter says he wants, and that could be sent to your wristwatch. However it gets done, there's way more people who want to reach you with a message than the messages you have time to scroll through one by one.
Chris Lee, thanks very much. Chris Lee, news director at KRON-TV in San Francisco. After the break, a new Bible.